This hearing concerns the new data reporting requirements under House Bill 2067 and the proposed rules to address those reporting requirements in the Texas Statistical Plan for Residential Risks and the Texas Private Passenger Auto Statistical Plan.
Okay, notice of today's hearing. Notice of today's hearing was posted on TDI's website and published in the Texas Register on October 24th, 2025. Any member of the public wishing to offer comments should fill out a witness card and submit it to Margo at the table in the back. I'll call on you and then ask you to identify yourself for the record. Now I'll call on Janae Wykowski from TDI's Property and Casualties Division to explain the ruling proposal.
My name is Janae Wykowski, and I'm representing TDI's Property and Casualty Division. I'm here today to propose the adoption of two new sections in 28 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 5, Subchapter O, relating to statistical plans. The new sections 5.9503 and 5.9504 adopt by reference revised versions of the Texas statistical plans for residential property and private passenger auto lines of business. Revisions to both plans implement House Bill 2067, which authorizes TDI to prescribe the form and manner for insurers to report on their reasons for declining an application or canceling or non-renewing a policy. The bill requires TDI to post an aggregated summary of the insurer reports on our website. We will not be posting individual company reports, all aggregated. We are planning additional rulemaking and guidance in the coming months to implement the bill for other lines of business subject to HB 2067. So I'll spend a few minutes summarizing some of the key proposed changes in the residential property and private passenger auto stat plans. So instead of revising the record layouts for the transactional reporting, we have created two new reports for each statistical plan that are at the zip code level. One for insurers to report the number of notices sent out for cancellations, non-renewals, and declinations by recent codes, and the other one for insurers to report the actual number of cancellations, non-renewals, and declinations. The new reason codes added to the stat plans will serve as shorthand for various common reasons that an insurer would decline an application or cancel or non-renew a policy. Insurers should know that these codes should not be used in the notices they send to consumers. Those notices must, by law, provide consumers with a precise incident, circumstance, or risk factors applicable to the applicant or policyholder that explain the reasons for the coverage decisions. Instructions for the new reports are also added in the statistical plans. These instructions provide the record layouts, descriptions of the required fields, and the list and descriptions of the applicable reason codes. Insurers are instructed to report the data by zip code and to submit quarterly reports for the private passenger auto plan and monthly reports for the residential plan. The reporting frequency for the new proposed reports aligns with the current reporting frequency for the existing stat plans. In both stat plans, the new notices report includes codes to indicate whether the insurer's decisions to cancel, non-renew, or decline was based on third-party information. In the residential property stat plan, these codes also include whether the reasons were based on the use of aerial imagery versus other types of third-party information. There is also an indicator for cancellations that occur during the first 60 days of a policy term. Based on HB 2067's effective date of January 1, 2026, the new reporting requirements will apply to all declinations, cancellations, and non-renewals starting on January 1, 2026, except for declination of an application that was made before January 1, 2026, and cancellation of a policy that was delivered, issued for delivery, or renewed before January 1, 2026. New requirements, instructions, and record layouts are also added to both plans for reporting the actual number of declined applications and canceled and non-renewed policies by zip code. The new reporting requirements apply to all insurers that currently report under the residential and private passenger auto statistical plans. Under the residential property stat plan, insurers will also report data on the type of policy. So we'll have data by tenant, condo, owner-occupied homeowners, dwelling, mobile homeowners, and standalone private flood policy on residential dwellings. Under the private passenger auto stat plan, we don't have a similar breakdown by type of policy, but insurers will report their actions on policies that cover regular autos, which are known as Group 1 vehicles under the current stat plan, as well as policies that cover antique autos, motorcycles, and other miscellaneous vehicle types, which are known as Group 2 vehicles under the current stat plan. The new reporting requirements for the notices and the actual counts will also apply to farm mutual insurance companies in the residential property stat plan. And while we are making updates to these statistical plans, we also propose revisions in other areas of the stat plans to add clarification, correct errors, remove obsolete technology references, and align reporting requirements with current industry practices. The latter includes adding two new classification codes to the quarterly market report in the private passenger auto statistical plan, and expanding the number of positions available for insurers to report deductible amounts from 4 positions to 5 positions in the private passenger auto stat plan. So this proposed rule was published in the Texas Register on October 24th of 2025. The TDI is providing a period of 30 days to receive comments on the proposed adoption of these rules. And will take the received comments as well as testimony today into consideration as the adoption order is being prepared. The written comment period will expire at 5 p.m. on Monday, November 24th, 2025. And then contingent on any comments we receive, staff respectfully requests that you adopt new sections 5.9503 and 5.9504. This concludes my presentation, and thank you for your consideration of the proposal, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Jim. And how will companies report cancellations that are reinstated or non-renewals that end up being renewed?
So for both of them, in terms of the notices, if a company sends out a notice, that will be counted in the notices report. In the event a cancellation is reinstated, the proposal requires that they still count that cancellation as a cancellation. That is consistent with how companies report data to the NAICs on the conduct annual statement report. So they would still count that cancellation, even if it's later reinstated. In terms of the non-renewals, say the company sends out the notice on the non-renewal, and they've got, you know, we're non-renewing you because of whatever reason. The consumer remedies that, and it's possible that the insurance company may decide not to non-renew that individual. So in that case, if the non-renewal ends up not happening, there would be no count on the actual, but there would still be a count that it notes one out.
Thank you.
That's all the questions.
All right, yes.
Okay, now I'm going to call for public comments. I have a few cards up here, and first I'm going to call on Keith Hopkins. And if you'll make your way up to the table and then state who you're representing and your position on the board.
I feel like I should be starting off kind of a little bit. This is a whole new experience for me, so those of you know me not too long ago, I was perfectly vertical. So then trying to rehab, I fell and broke my ankle in two places. So winner of the year. All right, well, my name is Keith Hopkins, and I'm the Vice President and General Counsel of Ranchers and Farmers Insurance Company. I appreciate the opportunity to provide a comment on the rule today. And the principal purpose for me being here is to express our concerns as a Chapter 9/11 Farm Mutual Insurance Company. And we have concerns about the authority to apply the rule to the farm mutuals. At this point, I'll incorporate my reference. I had sent in some informal written comments ahead of time just as a precursor to this hearing, and I may still submit formal written comments at the main period. So let me get this open real quick. I'll do it as it was there. Okay, and so I have to take you into the weeds a little bit as the basis for why I'm raising the question about the statutory authority under the rule. And it's a little bit unusual under the rule. The way that farm mutuals were even incorporated into this rule, there really wasn't a direct reference to the farm mutuals. It was kind of, we were in a single sentence, almost like a footnote in the rule, which was pretty unusual. And it was a bit of a surprise because relative to House Bill 2067, there really wasn't any reason to think that there was going to be any kind of profound impact or reporting requirements under the bill. So the rule was a bit of a surprise, particularly the way that we were incorporated in the, I'll call it a footnote. The reason for the concern, and I'm sorry, I'm dating myself to say this, but there was case law that I was tangentially involved in and tracking for some clients back at the end of the century, last century, so 25 years ago. The case is Fireman's Fund County Mutual Insurance Company versus Heidi. I've already submitted all the citation in writing. Now I won't bore you with the weeds of that. But the point of that case is the plaintiffs, it was a class action against the farm mutual or the county mutual. And it's relevant here because the county mutuals, like farm mutuals and Lloyds, the specialty category insurance companies under the code, they all have substantially similar language in their authorization chapter that says that they are exempt from the Texas Insurance Code, but for any sections that are enumerated in the chapter or any other section of the code that expressly incorporates by direct reference the, in our case, farm mutual. This was a case that went to the Texas Supreme Court. It was on the county mutuals, but it was a argument over that exemption language, so I believe it has direct relevance here for us. And in that case, the Heidi Court set forth that when interpreting statutes, the court attempts to give the legislature's intent. In doing so, we look first at the plain meaning of the statute's words, and then they did some analysis of the farm mutual's language. And the key takeaway from that was the Supreme Court that found, unless an enumerated statute expressly incorporates county mutuals, it does not apply to them. So the plaintiffs have been trying to bring in a host of other statutes and say that they were applicable for their purposes of their cause of action against the county mutual. And the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to do that because everything that you were trying to say applies to a county mutual doesn't expressly reference a county mutual, and the catch-all provisions of any other insurer or similar type language that we have in a host of statutes in the code is inapplicable. So while that case is about county mutuals, I believe it has direct correlation to the farm mutuals as well as the Lloyds and some of the other specialty companies, because the protocols of that statutory interpretation and analysis would be identical, and the court was relying on other cases that were unrelated to farm mutuals. It's been the long-standing statutory analysis of statutory application in Texas. So ultimately, they held that the none of those statutes applied because the specific term required, and that the Court of Appeals erred in holding that the statute did apply to county mutuals. Further within the Heidi case was reference to another case that I consider to be key here, and that's Smith versus Baldwin. And there, the Heidi, the Supreme Court said that as employed, a term in one section of a statute but excluded elsewhere in the statute, we presume the legislature had a reason for excluding it. So it's not sufficient for the mutual to be referenced in one place in the statute, but not referenced in a multitude of other places in the statute. And so I had to lay all that out. I apologize for getting a little bit into the weeds, but our concern is that House Bill 2067 did not have any of the express language relating to farm mutuals contained anywhere in the bill. I did take the time to go through the enumerated statutes in Chapter 911. I could not find anything that remotely says that farm mutuals are obligated to participate in the staff plan, be reporting to the staff plan, etc. And so in conjunction with that, I then looked at what we cited in the proposed rule, and there was a fair number of different statutory sites that proposed there as well in the rule, and none of those, almost none, made any reference whatsoever to the firm mutual. To the extent that I could find a couple, they did reference farm mutual, but it was only in one specific subsection of the given statute. And that's where I bring you back to the Smith versus Baldwin case that Heidi mentioned, that says it's insufficient for it to be referenced in one place in the statute and then say that the entire statute applies to it. It's only that particular subsection. So that leads me all back to, as best I can tell in reviewing the House Bill 2067, the only provision that related to the farm mutuals was the part under subsection C of the existing statute, which we were already subject to, which changed, it will effectively, under the rule, change some of the insurer statement that we're obligated to provide to insured in the event of cancellation, etc. Which leads me all back to basically my conclusion, and I want to pause. Is there any questions so far with what I've laid out at this point?
Yeah,
questions. All right. So in conclusion, I could not find anything that satisfied the well-established case law in Texas that requires under Chapter 911 that there be an express reference to the farm mutuals for applicability. And given that, I failed to find any statutory authorities that were cited in the rule to support any data collection, data reporting, and participation being subject to the Texas Insurance Plan. And the few places that I could find it, it's definitely insufficient to kind of try to gerrymander some authority by going into other sections of unrelated statutes and saying, well, farm mutuals were mentioned in this one subsection. The Baldwin case just clearly makes that inadequate for purposes of authority here in this context. So that's the extent of my comments, and I please any questions, I'm more than happy to put on the way back and have to talk about the case more.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate you coming tonight.
Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Okay, next I'll call on David Weber.
Afternoon, Commissioner. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Jessica, thank you. Good to see you too. David Weber, General Counsel for our Mutual Insurance Association. I'll be making comments. We'll be submitting written comments also for the deadline. I want to take this opportunity to this oral comments into the record. Kind of follow up on what Keith was saying, and just a comment of House Bill 2067. Declination, cancellation, our company already gave up reasons to people before that bill even passed. And even on the other part, agents, when they are direct underwriters, if an agent wrote that one of right the Point Prairie, they got the right of Point Prairie. So this bill didn't change anything for us. But I do want to talk about the data report.
Yes.
I am talking today representing Point Prairie for Mutual. I also serve, but won't be giving comments for the Texas Association of Mutual Insurance Companies. I'm the chair of the legislative committee, and that's the association of the 17 farm mutuals. And you'll hear from another farm mutual later, but we'll also be submitting comments to the record before the deadline. Keith talked about section 911.001 of the insurance code. This is a specific section in the farm mutual statute that says basically insurance code has to say a law applies to farm mutuals, or general law has to apply to mentioned farm mutuals, or a specific section must be listed in 911.001 for it to apply to farm mutuals. When you look at 2067, we're talking about this data set, and I'm only talking about the residential statute. I'm talking about the farm mutual. 551.006 was fitted to 2067. And this is subchapter A. The only part of chapter 551 that applies to farm mutuals is subchapter C. That's where farm mutuals are defined. But under subchapter A, that's not where farm mutuals are defined. So that subchapter does not apply to farm mutuals. Like I said, you find 551.006 is the section of the insurance code that talks about the annual reporting. There's no reference in that section farm mutuals, the farm mutuals. So we do not feel that that section applies to farm mutuals as the bill that's passed. So Keith also referenced looking at the laws that are in this rule proposal and talking about the stat plans. When you look at the stat plan today, you look at 38201-207. Long history for that stat plan statute. It goes back to 1991. I'm trying to bore you with this, but it goes back when it was originally created, the House Bill 2 in 1991. Everybody knows what House Bill 2 was way back in the day. But it created Article 2169, the statute, which was the origination of that stat plan, today's stat plan. There's other references in the code, but that's not the time I'm talking about this. In 93, it was changed to House Bill 1461, another amendment. In 1995, Article 2169 was amended again. And then in 1999, Senate Bill 1467 and the recodification placed it in the current position today in the insurance code. And there was a small amendment in 23, which changed the qualifications for staff plan to be for 5 years of experience in two. What I'm getting at without getting into too much detail is all these changes that occurred in staff plan statute, not one of those times that it referenced farm mutuals being applicable to that. The introduction to this rule also referenced 5.96 of the old insurance code, the non-codified work. That is titled 5.96, promulgated lines. Farm mutuals aren't promulgated. They weren't promulgated in 1983 when that was originally written into the code. And I won't get all the legislative changes that happened to 596 through the years, but not one of those changes ever referenced farm mutuals, so they looked for farm mutuals. So I don't think the data reporting that's in this bill applies to farm mutuals. And that doesn't mean that we aren't willing to work with you guys in trying to find solutions if that's what we need to do. The rule talks about options you guys looked at. One of those options rejected was NOAA data calls. If you don't have the 551-006, you don't have the staff plan. If you want information from our mutuals, that may be an option to do that. And certainly we can discuss that. But I do want to talk about how much we appreciate you, Commissioner, and your staff. Governor election staff, PNC staff, always do a good job. They reached out to us after session about this deal to make sure Farm Mutuals knew about it. But we didn't know is that we're contemplating adding Farm Mutuals into the staff plan. We were surprised by that. An offhanded remark by one of your staffers when I was hoping or something else was only heads up I got the day before that something like this was even being contemplated. So we understand why you're doing this, why you're looking to use the staff plan for the data reporting. It's just under the current law, and even what they passed with HB 2067, the statutory authority just isn't there to come to the Farm Mutuals. But let's try to find a way. Let's see what y'all need. We see if we can work for y'all. One of the Farm Mutuals testified as a very small Farm Mutual. I'll let him talk to you about the impact on small Farm Mutuals. But even something like this has a severe impact on Farm Mutuals. When the rule talks about different types of professions within a company that can help implement this, when most of the Farm Mutuals don't even have more than 6 employees. We're bigger, but most of the majority do not. So what I'm asking for y'all today is to look at that statute again. And at the end of the day, whatever rule you adopt can't be applicable to Farm Mutuals. But if y'all do need data, let's try to work and find a way to get there. And I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Jessica. Appreciate you having us here today. The opportunity to speak to you about this these proposed rules. We will submit some written comments before the deadline of the 24th. Expect to still receive more comments from her, but I wanted to give a few of those efforts support and get back into the APCIA. The most commonly raised concern from APCIA members involves the ability to implement these requirements. Insurers will make major changes to what they do because of this bill. Providing this data is going to be very difficult. Time is going to be needed for programming the reason codes and developing a process to obtain the data. It'll take time to build the framework to handle the calls about this. About this notice from consumers when they start dealing with it. It's going to require very soon to be able to get very detailed kind of notices. We believe there should be a phase in compliance schedule, perhaps starting with high-level data and working down to more granular reporting. At the least, we think there should be extra time given where the first report is due to allow for proper updating and testing. With the uncertainty of companies as they navigate this new system, we also think there should be safe harbor provided for good faith errors as they learn this. Concerns have also been raised about proposed reason codes. These are more detailed than companies employ currently. We worked some for them to make sure they're mapping them correctly. They will add complexity, and complexity adds costs. We would ask that insurers be allowed to submit their own reason codes, or at least the department give detailed guidance to help meet these new challenges. We'd also ask that any future code changes come with a minimum notice of 180 days of public comment, longer transition windows. We also have concerns about the required reporting of third-party data is used in declination, cancellation, and non-renewal. It's not language in the bill, and it's not captured by our companies or many of our companies we've heard from. It'd be very difficult to do this and may require manual review, which companies tell me may not be possible. Same with aerial imagery used in underwriting. There's currently no statute on how insurers may use aerial imagery. Our members also ask that only the primary reason for declination be required to be provided, not all reasons. We also think it would make sense to consolidate some of these reports. I question whether separate reports for home and auto were necessary. And in the auto staff plan, we would suggest consolidating some sections EF and G into possibly just two sections. There's a couple last suggestions. I think we like explicit confidentiality provisions for asserting trade secret protection. I think that clearer. And also to allow companies to file directly with TECO, has been requesting members. Members have also asked for a few clarifications that I'll raise today that hopefully can know more about. Several have asked how to handle vehicles that are in their garage in multiple zip codes or zip codes and auto insurance that are unknown that have handled that issue. There was clarification sought on timing. Does this apply only to applications policies delivered, issued, or renewed after January 1st, 2026? We take it that it does, but this is still continuing to call some questions. And so, for instance, an applicant starts quota on December 31st and the denial goes out 14 days later as included in these requirements. If a policy starts on December 31st and is canceled 30 days later, is that included? Does a third party, when you say third party, is that referred to any outside vendor or service provider supplies information leading to reporting and underwriting action, but does that include internal research that may use Google, for example? Should insurers handle flat cancellations differently than they do now because of spill? And then finally, is the required filing to be still a transmittal, or am I affidavit? This is, I appreciate getting to talk about this, bring some of these issues to the table. Happy to follow up with any information.
I would love to have that listed, right?
Okay, great.
Thank you, Scott. Next up on Albert Betts.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. General Counsel Garda. I'm Albert Betts, Executive Director of the Insurance Council of Texas. We're happy to be able to provide some feedback on this key rule and key legislative issue from this past session. Scott touched upon some of the issues that I was going to touch upon, so I'll save y'all a repeat of what he said and just try to hit it at a high level. Lots of comments from many of our members. In fact, I think we've got more comments on this rule than any other rule I've seen since in the 11 years I've been running the organization. One of the big concerns is the, as Scott mentioned, the statman itself, trying to implement it by 1/1/26 indicated the rule is impossible. I went back and tried to look at the last stat plan update, which I believe was in 2022 for residential. That stat plan update is a 6-month leeway for implementation. In deference to the need for companies to reprogram, review their process, and work with their underwriting units, work with their product people. This involves looking at policies and declinations and renewals for non-renewals and cancellations. So this is going to be a long process. If it's rushed, you may not get what you need, or companies may have problems submitting accurate and useful information. So those issues he's outlined, you'll probably see them in our comments. It's going to take time. Companies have to get these programs and these efforts in queue. Not as simple as pushing a button or saying, this is do this now. There might be other priorities already on board your company. So we definitely would ask for more time, and we'll submit written comments. A lot of 24 to emphasize the need for that. The effective date, in and of itself, as I read the stat plan, it suggests that you theoretically could have had to send these notices and track them already. As it says, reporting is required for notices related to cancellations, non-renewals, and declinations effective on or after January 1. The law takes effect January 1, and no one is prepared yet to submit any notices or in any format or coding to match that. We will have comments as we try to look back at Section 8 of House Bill 2067, which talks about the overall effective date of the bill. And that generally reads it applies to a policy or application delivered, issued, or renewed on or after the date of the action. And that's a little different than what I understand the TBI stat plan language to be. So we will submit some comments on that just to clarify that. The info required in the codes, aerial imaging was a big concern. The question of why the need for that, nothing in the bill about it, no laws in Texas about it. And aerial imagery is really a tool that companies should use. They could just as easily, I could say they do, but just as easily you look at Google Earth or actually go out and inspect the property. So we're not clear why we need to gather data. But aerial imagery or third-party information. And regardless, we'll be submitting some comments asking for some very clear confidentiality protections for that type of information if you're going to ask for companies. The law has provisions that in your summary you can't disclose the name of the company or issuer, but we want to make sure there's some really clear confidentiality requirements in the rule if adopted. And finally, overall, we're concerned about the level of detail. Scott touched upon some of that in his testimony, that the stat plan is required here. The law did not require that. I don't remember a lot of discussion about the level of detail. It was simply, let's get notices to consumers and let's provide some way to report it to TDI. So we'll submit comments asking for clarification, simplification of some of the data reporting requirements and on the effective date question, as well as overall concerns with how you implement this to be effective, but also be able to implement it in a timely and possible manner. So with that, I'll end my testimony and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Albert.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Next, I'll call on Josh.
Salvi, yes, ma'am. Salvi. How are you?
How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for being allowing me to be here today. I guess I'm the only non-lawyer person here, maybe. We represent, my name is Josh Song. Thank you for letting me be here. I represent Farmers Mutual Fire Insurance. Farmers Mutual Fire Insurance Association of Mount County. Say that three times fast. So, and we currently are located in New Braunfels, Texas. And while we're authorized under Chapter 911 of the Texas Insurance Code to write anywhere in the state, we primarily write in the 4 to 5 county region around New Braunfels, Texas. Farmers Mutual of Pinal County writes about $2.2 million of direct written premium per year. So we are a smaller farmer, as Mr. Weber had mentioned earlier. As a reminder, under Chapter 911, our writings are primarily concentrated in rural areas, which is exactly who we were created to serve. Our association has been in business since 1889, so we've been doing business for quite a while. Why are we here today? Well, first, I want to emphasize that Farmers Mutual of Pinal County believes in transparency for Texas consumers and always has. Just to give you a brief idea, Farmers Mutual are different from stock companies in a couple of different ways. First, we're not for profit. Second, we're member owned. Every new insurer is a new member who potentially has a part ownership in the company. For that reason, we take the time to truly understand our potential members. We ask applicants, Farmers Mutual from Pinal County, ask applicants to spend about 20 to 30 minutes with us by phone, in person, or we'll go to their house so we can explain who we are, learn about them, and review their risks and determine whether membership is the right fit. Transparency has always been fundamental to how we operate and will continue to do so. We're here today specifically to comment on the proposed statistical plan reporting requirement rules that stem from HB 2067. When we initially reviewed HB 2067, it was our understanding that the only portion applying to farm mutuals was subchapter C, chapter 551. The requirement to send all declinations, regardless of whether the applicant requested. We support that and will comply fully beginning January 1st of 2026. Just to note, we already send all cancellations and non-renewals as required by statute. However, the statistical plan reporting requirement itself is located in subchapter A of chapter 551. Subchapters A and B do not list farm mutuals in their applicability language. Only subchapter C specifically lists farm mutuals. And under chapter 911, as David previously mentioned, 911.001, our governing statute, that section specifically states, any law enacted after 1973 applies to Farm Mutual only if that law specifically states, and the statute states that it applies to Farm Mutuals. The statistical plan reporting requirement does not specifically list Farm Mutuals, and therefore, in my opinion, it does not apply. There is another important statutory consideration for Farm Mutuals. Chapter 911 requires that we maintain a specific expense ratio each year. And just to remind everyone, an expense ratio is your total operating expenses divided by your total income. So we have a specific requirement in Chapter 911 that we must keep. As a small association with only 5 full-time employees, including myself, and only $2.2 million in direct written premium, our income base is limited. If we were required to participate in monthly or quarterly statistical plan reporting requirements, the additional administrative, clerical, and compliance costs could materially impact our ability to maintain that required statutory expense ratio. That is a very real and serious concern for us. We absolutely support transparency, already practice it every day. But we believe the statutory framework governing Farm Mutuals under Chapter 911 is not aligned with placing Farm Mutuals into the statistical plan reporting requirement. And the financial impact on our required expense ratio could be significant. In closing, I want to thank you again for your time and careful consideration. Farm Mutuals have served rural Texans for more than a century. And we simply ask that rules applied to us align with the statute that governs. We fully support transparency. We will continue to serve our members with honesty and clarity. And we appreciate the opportunity to share how these proposed changes may impact small associations like ourselves. We appreciate what you do. We know it's a hard job. And we thank you for your time and attention. I'm here to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
All right, I've got one last card. Brennan Griffin.
Thank you, Commissioner, for this opportunity to speak. My name is Brennan Griffin. I represent Texas Appleseed. Texas Appleseed is a nonprofit working at the intersection of advocacy, research, and the law to improve the lives of vulnerable Texans. We supported this bill, the bill HB 2067, during the legislative session, including the addition of data collection to the bill. There's a clear interest among legislators and community members to understand the dynamics impacting access to insurance in the state and areas of the state that are experiencing particular challenges with access to appropriate home and auto insurance. We do plan to submit some written comments as well. We have sort of one overarching comment and then a series of smaller ones that might be helpful to consider. We were wondering why the, so TDI is proposing to create 2 new reports, a report on cancellations, non-renewal and declination notices, and a report of the quarterly number of cancellations, non-renewals and declinations. We thought it might be worth considering adding the relevant data fields to the existing premium reports, which already include zip code. This would allow for a finer grained analysis of what's going on. You may then have to do something separate for some of the smaller businesses and micro businesses that are not covered currently by those premium reports. But it would be, those are the largest insurers are the ones that are probably a huge portion of the market. So we can get a lot more information and understanding of what's going on in the market with that by adding those details to the existing reports. Then there's a few sort of smaller details. You know, the legislative intent is clearly to better understand what's happening in the market. And we think that declinations could be under-measured declinations by the policyholder due to unaffordable increases in price or other reasons are not included in the metrics collected. We don't want sort of a hidden process of people having their rates, a new policy proposed at just the unaffordable rate to sort of be hidden and it's effectively a declination of renewal. So On the third party data, having it only as a yes or no, with no additional metrics except for the aerial imagery and or property insurance, seems like overly broad and will not give very much detail. Someone mentioned, like, does this include Google or using Google or using, say, fire safety risk from CoreLogic. I think it would be helpful to actually know a little bit more about what kinds of third-party information is being used for auto insurance. We're seeing people use sort of real-time driving information, for instance, devices to set rates, and some of those are provided by third parties. So understanding beyond just aerial imagery, some of the other third-party data sources that are being used. It also just sort of a big other category. I know we can capture every single thing, but asking a little bit more sort of self-reported detail from the insurance companies in that other category, other, you know, included, and then asking for an explanation of some sort would be helpful, I think. On the auto policies, we saw that it doesn't seem to include information about specific weather-related categories of exposure to loss. There's a general sort of exposure to loss category, but it would be helpful to know if natural disasters, specific hail, increases in hail damage, wildfire, flooding, that kind of thing are also cause that stuff is broken out in the property insurance section, and so I think adding that in some of those categories to the auto policy information would be helpful. And then this is kind of minor, but it does seem like under the property insurance, wind, hail, and hurricane are all sort of lumped together as in one chunk of checkbox, and that is also sort of a very broad measure. Those are pretty separate events, and it would be good to understand which are sort of driving some of the kinds of cancellations, declinations, and so on. So those are our general comments. We'll write this up more specifically, but really appreciate the opportunity to speak on this, and really appreciate that so much attention is going into this really important part of Texas's economic picture. Insurance is a huge part of what you want to deal with every day and your expenses, and understand, being able to understand more specifically what's going on is will be very helpful to the public, to policymakers, and to regulators. So, yeah. So, thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Would anyone else like to comment? Let the record reflect that all those desiring to comment have now done so. TDI will accept all written comments received before November 24 at 5 p.m. Central Time. TDI will consider all validly submitted written comments and the testimony given today before preparing an adoption order for this rulemaking. Thank you all for participating in this hearing. The docket for 2816 is adjourned. Have a great evening.